almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water.
Today we walk into this house with an iconic South African plant, the Aloe Ferox. We must take the bitter with the sweet.
It is a matter that is under consideration. And all I would say is that watch this space.
Welcome to this week's episode of the SA Money Report. This financial podcast is brought to you by Fin24 and hosted by Deputy Editor Ahmed Arif.
It's all about what's happening now, what will happen in the future, and what can be done about all of that as a collective down the line. In other words, today, tomorrow, together. Or if you prefer, it's all about bringing possibility to life with Africanicity. It's the way these guys get things done. Yep, today on SA Money Report, we're talking about one of the big four, ABSA, or what was once known as the Amalgamated Banks of South Africa. It's been the home to a lot of big names and a lot of views, some more recent and controversial than others. But before we jump into the fray around the new CEO, which is why we are gathered here today, I want to introduce Fin24's fantastic financial services writer, Londiwe Buthelezi. Hi, Londiwe.
Hi, Ahmed. Good to be back.
So let's start with this. A couple of years back, we had the Barclays and ABSA split. A little while after that, Maria Ramos leaves as CEO. And then the person the bank chose to succeed her is Daniel Manele, a former Reserve Bank deputy governor. Lots were said and hyped up, but things didn't exactly work out according to plan for the bank and Manele, especially around the clash of culture, as they said. What happened there and why did it happen?
So, Ahmed, you remember that Daniel Manele was actually ABSA's first black CEO. So it was a big deal, really. And when he left the Reserve Bank in June 2019, there was a lot of speculation that the reason he's taking a six-month cooling off period is because he's going to ABSA, because there was the sense that ABSA needs, you know, a strong character to succeed Maria Ramos, and he seemed like the man that could do the job. So ABSA was willing to wait that 6 months period of his cooling off period. Which is why then it was a big shock for the bank to let him go after just 1 year of serving as a CEO. You remember that he started that job in January 2020, and already by April he is out of the bank. So initially, ABSA or the board said, you know, it has to do with clashing over how about to execute the strategy. And then I remember having the initial conversation with the outgoing chairman, Wendy Lucas Bull, and she said also management, you know, didn't see eye to eye with him. But later on, they retracted that statement when repeated then in subsequent stories, and they're like, no, it was just his clash with the board. So there's still those, you know, unanswered questions, because all we know is that there was a clash over the strategy. But my last interview with him was a month before he actually stepped down.
I remember that, yeah.
And that interview, he was talking about how he's going to lead ABSA to reclaim its rightful place in Africa. And now when you listen to ABSA's strategy, you know, in media conferences, a results presentation, they're all talking about reclaiming this rightful place in Africa. So you're like, okay, they were, you know, aligned in terms of where ABSA's going.
Yeah, yeah.
So was it maybe the problem of how he wants to get there versus how the board wants to get there, or who he wanted to get there with versus who the board thought he should be in his team? So we'll never really know, because both ABSA and Manele have not said anything more than
And it's likely they're not going to say anything.
No, not anymore.
And what's he doing now, Manele? Where's he in the world?
Well, actually, I think the private sector has recognized his skill, because he's now the chairman of Alexander Forbes, which is South Africa's largest pension funds administrator, and also the public sector, because in February President Ramaphosa appointed him as the head of the Presidential Climate Finance Task Team. So he's the man that's tasked with mobilizing funds for South Africa's just transition and ironing out the details of how it's going to stick to its COP 2016 commitments.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, moving on down the line, eventually at the end of March, ABSA eventually announced that, hey, we've appointed a new CEO. So tell us, Lanira, who is it and how did they come to choose this person?
Actually, Ari has been at ABSA since 1997.
This is Ari Rattenbach, yeah?
Yes. So he's been at ABSA since 1997, and he's a guy that I actually spoke to a couple of times before because he has the biggest business unit at ABSA, ABSA RBB, or the Retail Business and Business Banking. So he, in that period, he's held several other executive positions, and on the day of his appointment, when I spoke to analysts, you know, they basically said he was one of the obvious choices for ABSA, and he is the first internal appointment since 2006, so that was seen as a positive. And also the fact that, you know, if the board had clashes with someone about how to go about executing the strategy, maybe because he's already an insider and he knows how the board wants to go with this, that maybe he is a good appointment for that reason. But obviously now we've seen some backlash. So initially from the PIC, and the PIC is no small voice, because it holds a 5% stake in ABSA. It is one of their biggest shareholders. And after that, you've seen the Black Management Forum also coming out with a statement. But the common theme is just that, you know, they're disappointed. Everyone is disappointed. So the PIC thinks that this is a missed opportunity, because after the Daniel Minnelli incident, ABSA could have made a comeback by showing or publicly demonstrating that it is still committed to transformation. Because when Minnelli left, there were a lot of questions about it, you know, is it because the bank refuses to transform from within? So they think that was a missed opportunity. And the BMF basically saying, you know, it shows this dominance of four white males at ABSA. And you'd recall that in the board, there is just one black South African female who was now the interim FD, but she's Bongi Modise, but now she is still the interim CE of the business that Ari headed, the RBB. So we don't know how long she's going to stay there, because she's also there on an interim basis.
Yeah. Yes. And given all of this, you've kind of hinted at it already with sort of the fact that he's strong internally, but has ABSA actually dealt with this specific criticism head on, you know?
Yeah, after the PIC statement, I think they prepared their own holding statement, and they're basically saying they've heard from a lot of stakeholders, actually, who have concerns about this appointment, and they're willing to engage those stakeholders. But they're still very clear that the board was clear in its reasons when it appointed Ari as the CEO. They believe that his track record and business performance throughout the division that he's led at ABSA speaks for itself on his ability to deliver on the group's objectives, which means he understands what ABSA wants to do, what the board wants ABSA to go. And also they've basically said that, you know, he might be a white man leading the organization, but when you look at his team at RBB, he has demonstrated that he appoints a very diverse team, both in terms of race and gender. And when you look at that team that he leaves behind in RBB, you will see just how he has turned around the, you know, demographic profile of it. They basically said both Ari now being the group CEO and the board are still very much aligned and committed to transformation at ABSA. So why he might be the white CEO there. We don't know that, and it doesn't mean maybe we'll be seeing more black executive appointments and people moving up. We won't know, but we'll watch with Punki what happens to Punki Modise.
Let's quickly jump to another controversy involving Absa, this time with Sipho Phatyana and why he wasn't appointed as Absa's chair. There's court cases and a bunch of other stuff happening kind of concurrently around this. Can you give us a quick rundown of what's happening with the Phatyana situation and where is it currently?
The Sipho Phatyana matter is really, you know, quite a mess, I must say, because the first time we got to know about it was when he sued the Prudential Authority, which is the Reserve Bank's regulator of banks, so saying that they blocked his appointment as a possible chairman of Absa. According to Phatyana, the board had already told him that he was the preferred candidate for the chairmanship, although he never submitted his name to the PA formally. He says the reason it couldn't submit his name to the Prudential authorities because we've written stories about that, how they had an informal engagement with Maria Ramos, who told the Prudential authority about his sexual harassment charge while he was still at AngloGold Ashanti. And obviously he's disputed all those allegations and showed us the reports, that basically what he says, you know, nothing proves that that was a legitimate complaint. And after he sued the Prudential Authority, Absa happens to then respond to that as a cited party. And in its response, it basically also sides with the Prudential Authority. And Phatyana took offense with that, you know, why couldn't they just respond as Absa to set the facts straight instead of saying, you know, of siding with the Prudential Authority. So now, on top of the Prudential Authority court case, he now has another court case with the Absa board, and that one he wants the board to, because remember that when he was no longer appointed as the chairman, he was also stripped off his board membership. He was also the lead independent director that fell away, or anything to do with Absa basically is no longer in the board. So he wants to be reinstated
in the
board.
So
there is that court case going on now, and there's the Prudential Authority case. And my last conversation with him, he basically said it looks like it's going to be a long, protracted legal battle.
Hopefully it's not another Peter Moyo long case.
And he said, you know, he is not going to back down, even if it takes as long as Peter Moyo's case took. He basically is ready to empty his bank accounts if need be, but we'll be watching that.
Okay, lovely way to wrap this all up. Obviously, we weren't waiting for the court to decide with Phatyana, but jumping to the CEO thing, what do you think needs to be done to kind of smooth things over the EPSA around this? You know, it's highly unlikely that they're going to change their mind about Ali's appointment, but it's facing heat, and it's, you know, first it had the Manele stuff, and obviously the Phatyana stuff, and now there's, sort of backlash about Ali's appointment. How does the bank move forward in a way that keeps people happy for now?
I mean, you cannot reverse the appointment of Ari as the permanent CEO. So I think where they probably still have an opportunity to save face and show commitment to transformation is, you know, what will they do with the interim executive when they appoint the permanent heads of the business unit? Is it going to be, you know, black executives? Is it going to be someone from within the bank? What does, you know, their succession planning from the bank looks like in terms of appointing black executives in the bank in those positions? I mean, as far as the board is concerned, it's already led by a black male. So But still, you have this sense that people feel that even that board is not making decisions that show that the bank is willing to transform. And yes, that board have presided over the decision to appoint Ari. So I would say probably any executive appointment that they make now, they have to think really hard about, you know, who the black executive that they can put in that position. At the same time, I know that black executives also don't want to be seen as just, you know, a PE token. So it's quite a fine balancing act.
Yeah, it's a balancing act. Yeah,
but we'll see.
Thanks for talking to us today, Landiwe.
Thanks, Amash.
Okay, that brings our show to an end. The music in this episode is courtesy of Getty Images and Epidemic Sound. This installment was produced with the help of the stellar Kayleen Morgan. Thank you for listening.